This is Mae Brussel, the second half of broadcast number 758. The next half of this program, I'm going to go very quickly, just citing the top of these stories without too much comment. I think you'll be able to figure out why I'm sharing them with you, and I want to just get through as many as I can in this one half hour. First of all, there was a plea bargain made with Kathy Smith regarding the murder of John Belushi. I did quite a few, several broadcasts on Belushi, why he was political, who he was making fun of, why he had to be killed. Kathy Smith, a very important woman with an attorney, Mr. Weitzman, who represented John DeLorean, got her off on just about every charge. They dropped a second-degree murder charge, and 10 of the 13 counts against her for furnishing and administering heroin and cocaine were dropped. Now, how does a woman who is on probation for giving drugs, getting off all of these charges and giving 20 shots in one evening to a man as prominent as John Belushi, as well-known and well-loved as John Belushi, then going out, hearing the death rattle and so forth, going out and having breakfast and coming back and talking to the police and going up to Canada, and actually it was her own admission that she killed him. I guess she didn't want to be blackmailed by them, or she did say she thought she'd be killed, that she came forward, and the case has taken 4 years to prosecute. We hear every day that we're going to use the military to get into the drug traffic because it's out of control. We can't control it. And yet when you have dealers this prominent with somebody so prominent, and they've already have a past record of drugging, and they're on probation, and a murder has been caused, John Belushi is just treated like a dog or an animal in a concentration camp. People think you have to need ovens or Auschwitz or Dachau, Treblinka to line up for the Holocaust or the end of the world. The end of the world is everywhere if you want to read your paper, and this is just one sickening example. Now, in regard to the trial in Seattle, the Jewish family that was killed, Mr. Goldmark, the fellow responsible for the murder, there was no mystery. His name is David Rice. He was described as a jobless steel worker. He killed Mr. Goldmark, his wife, and four sons. That's four people murdered. He had literature and affiliations with the Aryan Nations and the Nazi Party. He thought he was doing this country a favor because he thought Goldmark was Jewish and he thought he was a communist. A newspaper out of Seattle reprinted a section in the Washington Post, said prosecution rests in Rice murder trial. The prosecution rested its case in the trial of David Rice, and he was found guilty, after presenting evidence that he admitted killing a prominent Seattle attorney. He said that he killed them for the money. The last prosecution witness, Seattle Police Detective Earl Davis, had a conversation where he heard Rice and his former girlfriend, Ann Davis, shortly after his arrest, December 26. "Why did you do it?" Ann asked Rice. "For the money," he said. "Why the kids? I was in it too far. I had to do it. They could identify me." So this is a man that works with an organization that's express goal is to overthrow the United States, cut the throat and hang the Jews from stem to stern across the entire nation, kill every Jew and black in the United States and labor leader. And he's tied to organizations that declared war as of May 1985. And December, four people were killed. And his only excuse for having to kill the four of them was he was in too far. And the reason he did it for the money. So he didn't obviously care that much about whether the Goldmark family were communist or Jewish or whatever. He had a job to do, and he was paid. And like Michael Sindona, who was given cyanide, I'm sure that suicide attempt of Mr. Rice just the day after the conviction, practically, just last week, has more to do with trying to get rid of him, because now that he seems suicidal, he can, in fact, commit suicide, and we won't know who paid him to do the job. Now, there's some very important cases that are connected and not separate from each other. The same attorney representing Kathy Smith represented John DeLorean and got off his case. And DeLorean has been wanted for missing $17 million. He has a case in Detroit that's supposed to come up. The case is stalled. I understand, somebody had told me, and I don't usually pass rumors, that the deal for George Bush to run as CIA director is based on the fact that he is working closely with Pat Robertson, who is directly associated and linked to John DeLorean, and that they will get DeLorean off the cases and the charges will be dropped. DeLorean is one of the most important of the hidden government surreptitious agents that's floating around the world today. He was photographed last week in a place, a nightclub, with his new girlfriend, Coco Mitchell. New York City West Side, and he was at an Indian restaurant having a good time with a very pretty lady and not worrying about his suit. And how long is it going to take for DeLorean to be acquitted of the next large suit? Now, Larry Layton was accused of shooting Senator Leo Ryan. You remember Leo Ryan? That was in Jonestown way, way long ago, right? Well, Larry Layton is living in San Francisco, and he wanted his retrial thrown out of the murders that took place at the airport of the People's Temple because he said the courts say you're supposed to have a speedy trial and it's against the Constitution to not have a quick trial. His original trial ended in 1981, where the jury was deadlocked 11-1. A retrial was supposed to come in 1982. They asked the judge to dismiss the charges, and just this week the judge said, I won't dismiss them, but Layton still is out loose and walking around, and Leo Ryan is buried, as are 912 people from Jonestown, and this person who's accused of shooting a senator is still using every loophole to prolong the trial and then say, I want off because the trial took too long. Now, Klaus Barbie is still sitting there. This is the third year where he hasn't gone to trial. He was picked up in 1983, January of 83, and taken from Bolivia to France for a trial. And I said from the time or before he was, right after he was picked up, that the drugs that John DeLorean was sitting with were allegedly, and this was told to me on authority that I've checked over and over again through the years, and I'm still in touch with him. It came from Bolivia, from Klaus Barbie, and that the money went into the account of Joseph Mengele. Now, this could be one of the reasons that Barbie and John DeLorean are still out on the streets. I don't have any doubt about it. This one article about Klaus Barbie says, Barbie trial delayed, and the Supreme Court has postponed the trial of Klaus Barbie. It was scheduled to start February 3rd, remember that? And they were going to delay it until after the elections in France. Well, they had their elections in France, and the 73-year-old Gestapo leader still hasn't gone to trial. The legal experts are bickering, and it's going on. It'll go probably, he'll die before he ever goes to court. This one article says, some French newspapers predicted Barbie will never be put on trial because of his poor health. They also believe that he knows too much, and this article is from the B'nai B'rith Messenger. It came out of the B'nai B'rith Messenger on the trial being delayed, and they don't believe he will ever go to trial. The charges are for crimes brought on by the French military court in Lyon, and he has never been bashful about his links to the Central Intelligence Agency. In fact, to Henry Kissinger, when he first was taken as a war prisoner. And then there's another article this past week, and this explains why the trial is delayed, of course. Barbie probe in Australia. This is out of the Washington Post, May 31st. Sydney. The United States wanted Australia in 1952 to resettle Klaus Barbie, who's accused of war crimes in France. Peter Baum called for a government inquiry into the Australian involvement in resettling Nazis. The document suggests that Nazis may have slipped into our system in Australia, but the American government was making the arrangements for him to be there, and when he didn't go to Australia, he was taken to Bolivia, where he worked with the cocaine kings and began pouring cocaine into the United States and making millions of dollars for death squads and torturing and police putting down liberals and other kind of labor people or revolutionaries that wanted to overthrow the dictatorships in Bolivia. One quick item on the Kennedy assassination. I haven't updated that in a long, long time. The Houston Post has a story, trees order removed from Dallas grassy knoll. The trees are important to duplicate the scene of the crime to show the view that Lee Harvey Oswald would have had from the sixth floor if he had shot the rifle from the sixth floor and the direction of the trajectory of the bullets. This article says the grassy knoll, the location where John Kennedy was murdered, was the focus of the investigation of the 1963 assassination of President Kennedy. It is the subject of a fresh controversy about preserving the historic facts. The Dallas County Historical Commission recently insisted that four holly trees planted by the City Parks Department on the sloping stretch or grass in downtown Dallas be removed. The trees are visible from the sixth floor window of the former Texas School Book Depository. We just think it isn't appropriate to have trees where there weren't any at the time because the Historical Commission wants to reserve the option of people being able to see what Oswald could see or couldn't see as a motorcade came by, but now they're padding it with extra trees that will be quite large, if you've ever seen holly trees, and block the view. Thank you for a friend from Texas who sent me this and many, many articles. She sends me about 40 or 50 articles every single week. Now, the dirty actions that take place in this country come with a lot of funding, not only out of the White House, where the White House itself has its own budget, but the Washington Post had an article breaking down some of the budget of the intelligence community, and this was March 26, how the United States cloaks its $24 billion budget for intelligence. The details of intelligence community are secret, and it's Patrick Tyler wrote the article, one of the most secret and confusing budget stories in Washington is the annual funding and battle over U.S. intelligence. In the executive branch, where you have access to all the details of the budget, it takes more than 20 security clearances to understand the programs and to get through to the way the budget is given out, even to such things as infrared imaging satellites, fake noses, mustaches, and wigs. You have to have 20 clearances to get a breakdown of some of the money. 7 to 8% of the $300 billion defense budget is spent on intelligence. Over the next 2 months, the House and Senate and the oversight committees will mark up their bills for the intelligence community that spends billions of dollars, but which are carefully disguised in the defense budget. So when Ronald Reagan gets $300 billion in defense to defend the United States, 7 to 8% of that is to do covert action to create situations that make who they consider enemy to be the guilty ones again, and also hire people, reporters, and lawyers and judges to make sure that those guilty get released when they are taken to task in the courts. The article says the size of the intelligence budget is classified. Nobody sees it. The proposed intelligence budget far exceeds $24 billion a year. It is spread among four military services. They're the following: the CIA, the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office, and the National Security Agency, NSA. William Casey is nominally the head of the budget to control it. The Pentagon shifted the management of its intelligence programs just recently under Ronald Reagan to Policy Secretary, who used to be with Fred Ickley, and they create a new czar for intelligence, and many of you don't even know his name. He's not a household word. His name is Donald C. Latham, the Assistant Secretary for Command, Control, Communications, and Intelligence. Latham is the czar of the intelligence community. The CIA covert paramilitary operations such as in Afghanistan, Nicaragua, Angola get more publicity, sometimes $500 million a year, maybe 2 or 3% of their 7 or 8% of the Pentagon budget. Half of the intelligence budget out of the $24 billion, $12 billion is called the National Foreign Intelligence Program, NFIP. It encompasses the CIA, the NSA, the DIA, the NRO, National Foreign Intelligence Program, pronounced they have a name, NFIP. It's Casey's responsibility as director of the CIA to be over the budget of the CIA, the DIA, the reconnaissance, and the National Security Agency. The other half of this, the other $12 billion, goes to Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger. This $12 billion has its own title, TIARA, or Tactical Intelligence and Related Activities. The TIARA budget under Caspar Weinberger pays for ongoing intelligence in the military service, reconnaissance flights, communication intercepts. Now, that communication intercept is the event where persons from East Germany were found calling Libya that we bombed the nightclub and then calling afterwards and saying the bombing was successful. No fool has to do that, as I said before. Anybody can read a paper and know it was successful. And this is the kind of intercept where Ronald Reagan says, I have it on good authority, and he has a budget of $12 billion just for that kind of operation. And for this TIARA, the article says, is involved with spy planes. They used it in Central America. They helped friendly forces surrounding Nicaragua, and that program buys all kinds of sophisticated equipment so that there's a $24 billion budget. Casey takes 12, the Pentagon takes 12, It's very, very top secret. This article concludes, because of the intelligence community's secrecy, the budget officers who preside over it have a great deal of power. Some critics suggest that their fraternity is too close. The chief budget officer for the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, his name is Duane Andrews, is married to Opal Andrews, a special assistant to Mr. Latham, the Czar of Weapons, the Pentagon's new intelligence czar. So the husband and wife control the House of Representatives intelligence and the Czar of Intelligence over all of these matters. And the CIA's top budget officer, George Pickett, his nickname is Chip, moved to his current position from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, where he was the chief budget overseer. So the House Committee on Intelligence and the Senate Committee on Intelligence have the people from the very top agencies. So when Congress needs an oversight, they can't do anything about curtailing these activities because the oversight people are part or married to those people actually doing the actions, not to protect us and not to tell the elected members of Congress on those committees what is happening, but to protect their mates or be assured that they get the next job moving up, just as certain people did at the time of the shuttle accident. Now, regarding the agent provocateur effect and the way this money works in Libya, I just want to cite one or two articles. One was from the Washington Post, May 17th. The title is Libya, Egyptian Agents Guided the United States War Plans. These stories from the UPI. Libya charged yesterday, Muammar Gaddafi and the Libyans, that Egyptian agents operating in Libya used radio transmitters on the ground to guide United States warplanes to their targets in April on Tripoli and on Benghazi, the official news agency reported. The report said Libyan security forces smashed the Egyptian espionage and sabotage network after they arrested an Egyptian-born leader, Miraji Abu Aziza. The report said Aziza was arrested one day after the raids in possession of a United States-made radio transmitter. His case has been referred to the Public Prosecution Department so the courts may pass their verdict. The report said he was recruited by the Egyptian military intelligence to infiltrate Libya to probe patrols and military camps. So that is how they would know where the home of Muammar Gaddafi was if they didn't know before. And the arrangement with Egypt was to help bomb and invade Libya at the same time. And Mr. Mubarak and the army didn't do it, but they had an Egyptian right there. Now, Ronald Reagan went from the Libyan crisis to the summit in Japan, and right after Chernobyl exploded, these two events were his main subject at the summit. But he has been very, very quiet. He has hardly opened his mouth since the speeches at the summit on Chernobyl and on Libya for very good reasons. And the reason is that part of the $24 billion budget for the four agencies that have intelligence are directly linked to these operations. And now maybe he'll shut his mouth for a few more weeks. Another story out of Honolulu, the Sunday Star Bulletin, an advertiser, says, evidence of Syrian terrorist links puts the United States in a quandary over policy, written by David Hess. Bit by bit, evidence is accumulating that Syria played a prominent role in the recent terrorist acts, as has Libya, and the Reagan administration is a quandary on what to do. Item 1, on April the 17th, British authorities stopped the blowing up of an Israeli airline in London, where 200 Americans were aboard. They arrested Nizar Hindawi, a Jordanian, who said he was trained and financed in Syria, and the Syrian embassy in London helped him plan the operation. And again, the Jordanian part could be the Mr. George Habash and the PLO and the Jordanian trying, hoping that eventually, and it rubbed off, the terrorism would be blamed to Gaddafi. And when he was caught, he said he was trained in Syria. Second item, in West Germany, the police intelligence officials arrested Hindawi's brother, the same family, and Mr. Hassi. I mentioned his name last week, the man that was cited for the Berlin disco bombing. He was charged with taking part in the April 5th bombing of the disco. Two people, including an American soldier, were killed, and just last week a second one died as a result. Hassi has denied involvement in the disco bombing, but admitted taking part March 29th when he bombed the German Arab Friendship Society, allegedly engineered by a Syrian embassy in East Berlin. And again, Gaddafi is blamed for this terrorism in Europe and trying to say it's going to move to the United States. Item 3, in Rome, Italian authorities reconfirmed earlier reports, which the White House and the Ronald Reagan William Casey group have played down, that Syria was implicated in the post-Christmas airport bombing that killed 17 people, the one in Rome, and it wounded 80 others. Mohamed Sahram, the lone terrorist, the survivor of the attack, reported that he was trained by Syrian agents in Lebanon, again under George Habash, the same group that I cited when I wrote about the Korean airline and Habash's role to Larry McDonald and John Singlaub of Western Goals. The article goes on, he was trained in instructions in Damascus and then accompanied by Syrian agents through Belgrade to Rome. Now, the Belgrade thing is to rub off the Ajah story by having him travel through Belgrade that the KGB is involved in this terrorism. And remember, Mark David Chapman was sent to Lebanon to be trained in shooting before he took a trip, or as part of a trip, it was before he went around the world and ended up in New York killing John Lennon. They traveled this guy through Belgrade to get a little smell or a touch of the KGB, hopefully, or to rub off. Sarams reported that he told Italian authorities that Syrian agents helped him, and they bankrolled a simultaneous attack in Vienna where 3 were killed and 30 were wounded. In weighing the implications of these disclosures, the Reagan administration has been ambivalent. They're actually dumbstruck. That is the word. And again, when is the Teflon going to chip those people, Weinberger and Schultz and Reagan? How long can this go on? They're very kind. They don't call the administration a liar. This is a conservative newspaper. They say he is ambivalent about the evidence. On the one hand, Secretary of State George Shultz and his lieutenants acknowledge the evidence exists of a Syrian involvement. But on the other hand, the White House officials question whether the proof is clear enough to warrant taking actions against Syria. As I said before, there's a fight between the State Department and the Heritage Foundation and George Shultz, and they wanted him fired, and he changed his views 180 degrees and will say anything they want him to say or else he will be out or liquidated. And the truth is that they know it wasn't Syria involved in these things at all, and so that they stay silent rather than deal with the question of the surviving people who've been arrested that tell where the terror is coming from. This article continues that there's another example where the U.S. military experts are suspicious of Syria. They're impressed with their anti-aircraft capability. They don't want to tangle them militarily. And the strategists don't want to meet them head-on with their Soviet-supplied missiles that they used in a low attack in 1984. They have 180 Soviet-supplied anti-aircraft missile. And the article implies that we can't touch Syria because we don't know what Russia will do if we come in and attack Syria. We don't know if then they will respond and attack Israel, and we need Israel for defense. But it gives a reason or a series of reasons why we can't get even with Syria, but it doesn't explain how Reagan could cook up the evidence and the conversations and the things that he had absolute proof that was Libya. And that is what the $24 billion budget is about and the phone calls. And I think it really is a lot of money wasted. Another article in the San Francisco Chronicle, War of Presidential Words. And in the White House, the speechwriters are shifting. Bentley Elliott, the speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, left the White House, and he's going to work for Jack Kemp in his presidential ambition. He was expected to work for Kemp, but he didn't expect to be fired. Patrick Buchanan wanted Peggy Noonan as the team of speechwriters to be appointed. But finally, Chief of Staff Donald Reagan, who isn't totally stupid, you don't become head of a huge empire like he is, like Merrill Lynch, and have prominent positions in the cabinet by being just dumb. The article says Donald Reagan rejected the suggestion of Patrick Buchanan of Peggy Noonan. Why this bickering? Because the hardcore conservatives are fighting the other team. The Reagan team is said to be right now pragmatic. They're worrying about public opinion. And here's a quotation. There's always disputes over too much hardline right-wing stuff, said one of the sources close to Donald Reagan, chief of staff. They believe now that the president shouldn't do anything that could possibly get him in trouble. These two approaches will inherently clash. And it really boils down to one group pushing the Bitburg and saying there's no Waffen-SS, that they were little boys, they didn't know what they were doing, and recognize the Gestapo and the Waffen-SS, and the other one wanting it to be overtly sympathetic with those people that we fought against during the war but we work with now. And the lies are so apparent in our foreign policy of what's going on and how it's happening. And as I say, I think there's a series of agent provocateur events, which I've been citing for many, many weeks on the air. Now, there's a lot of discussion of the Hollywood movies that have been pushed out ever since Red Dawn. They've been gushing out with the most violent anti-Soviet bent possible, but the studios are being taken over as if they weren't always, not just conservatives, but literally bloody people wanting to get this action going. A summary of this mentality was published in the L.A. Herald May 27th, titled "Hollywood's New Role in the Selling of the Pentagon." And the gist of this article by Maxwell Glenn and Cody Shearer is that the Pentagon spends $1 billion recruiting military people every year. In order to go to our army, our cause is so righteous that they have to spend $1 billion to get you in. But if they can make movies and offer the military equipment, it's cheap. And they even cite in this article that in making this last movie, Top Gun, with Tom Cruise, that even if they had lost the Navy plane, which cost $36 million, if it had gone down, the F-14, it still would have been cheap because it cost $1 billion. And by using the major motion pictures and selling the pictures, you're literally getting young people to want to join the military services. So you recruit them through the box office and the popcorn and the Coca-Colas and maybe throw in a little subliminal, and your budget wouldn't have to be $1 billion. So Hollywood is taking the role of recruitment. The article says, after viewing the new Tom Cruise movie Top Gun, John Lehman, Secretary of the Navy, said, "I was so excited I could hardly stay in my seat." Lehman, a pilot, said at the post-screening party at the Washington National Airport, "I think it's going to be a blockbuster, a good old-fashioned rambunctious adventure story, not cluttered with a lot of plot." Now, this is the same John Lehman, Secretary of the Navy, who was sided with John Tower and Henry Kissinger at these homosexual parties in Washington, D.C. Maxine Cheshire wrote about it. And I'm sure these people, as in Nazi Germany, get their rockers or their excitement. Not all homosexuals, but there's an element that was very strong in cracking down on homosexuality in Germany while the top officials were very much part of that activity. And John Lehman was described in a book as part of that activity. And his actual excitement reminds me that his transference of emotions of any kind to these military things is the way he and many people like him get their gratification in identifying with these very strong macho warriors. And Lehman said he could hardly stay in his seat. He was so excited. John Lehman, the article describes, is Secretary of the Navy, and Top Gun to him was one of the most graphic pieces of Navy boosterism to come out of Hollywood in years. Thanks to a helpful Pentagon, the film's producers had at their disposal two aircraft carriers, USS Enterprise, the USS Ranger, a large number of aircraft, F-14 Tomcats, F-5 Tigers, four Skyhawks, and the authentic scenery of Miramar Naval Air Station, a 24,000-acre metropolis near San Diego. It's its own area, 24,000 acres, for the military. There wasn't much need for special effects. The pilots that were used were the famous fighter weapons school used in Top Gun program. They did their complicated handwork for the cameraman. In return for a pledge of thorough accuracy and attention to commitment and lifestyle of Top Gun trainees, the Navy promised full cooperation to the producing team of Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, whose credits include Flashdance and Beverly Hills Cop. Incidentally, Clint Eastwood, the new mayor of Carmel, is now making a movie, and it's under the conditions, again, of using the Army and the military, and they will keep him advised if his line isn't consistent with what they want. He has advisors from the Marine working on the current movie now, but he had a long experience with military. I'll give you some more of that in a little while. The article says, Hollywood has not always been so lucky. The Defense Department looks over scripts, like some more than others. They didn't like ABC's The Day After. This is the effect of nuclear bombs, and they restricted any help. They wouldn't give it to them. The article goes into the fact that military hardware is used. The F-14 cost the set $7,600 an hour, but even if they used the F-14 as I cited and it went down, they said that is cheap. The Pentagon spends $1 billion on recruitment this year. This alone counts for half of the figure. The Navy gets $201 million, and the rest goes to other agencies for recruitment. So the $201 million would cover an airplane that's lost. It's cheaper to make the movie and take a chance on a $36 million plane going down than to put it into recruitment. And that's the gist of the article. The time is out now, so I have to stop. But I think you get from my tone of voice my disgust and anger on how this thing keeps going on, and Hollywood is making these movies to recruit the young into the Army and glorify war. This is Mae Brussel. My time is up, so I do have to stop. Thanks again for the articles and the books and the material you keep sending me. I'll be back with you next week.